And we're started.
Thank you very much. Welcome everybody to the September 24, 2024 Thurston County Land Use Hearing Calendar. I am hearing examiner Sharon Rice. I'm an attorney who works on contract with Thurston County and about 10 other cities and counties as a hearing examiner. And as the county's appointed examiner, I have jurisdiction to hear and to decide the item on today's agenda. Today we're considering file 2023-105-222. This is a request by Mountain Terrace Builders, Inc. for a reasonable use exception. I have some introductory explanatory remarks. Please bear with me. They should help us all know how to participate. Hopefully they'll be informative. If you need to get my attention today, please call me Examiner Rice or Ms. Rice. And if you have requests on how we should address you, please let us know when you first testify. Today's virtual hearing is being recorded by Zoom, and it's the audio recording that is a crucial part of the legal record of this legal hearing. All testimony and comment made during this meeting will become part of the public record. Please keep that in mind. I do ask folks typically to please mute your audio when you're not testifying, because that reduces inadvertent interruptions. Also, if you could silence your cell phones or any other noise-making items in your environment, that'll help us hear you when you offer your testimony. And please remember that despite the fact that it's a virtual hearing, it is a legal proceeding. If we have any disruptions, I will be enlisting the assistance of hearing clerk Sonia Cady to deal with those so that we can protect the integrity of the audio recording. In that same vein, I will ask people as much as possible to please speak one at a time so we can hear everything you have to say. And if you need to interject or interrupt, give us a visual signal to help us know that you're coming so that the other speaker can stop and we don't have two people speaking at once. I will ask folks, before you testify, the first time you speak in the on the hearing today, I will ask you please to state and spell your name, and then to give us your job title or the name of your relationship to this application for land development. And then I will ask you please to take an oath to tell the truth before you testify. The Washington State Appearance of Fairness Doctrine applies to all land use hearings, and that statute requires the decision maker to be free from bias or prejudice. And so I will disclose, again, I'm not a county employee. I work on contract for this and the other governments. I don't own property or have family or friends who own property anywhere in the vicinity of the proposal. And I have not had any conversations with any people, not applicants, not staff, not the public, regarding the merits of the RUE proposal. And because those facts are all true, I believe I'm capable of issuing an impartial decision. Anyone who thinks they have grounds to challenge my impartiality is required by that state law to raise the challenge at their first opportunity, which would be your testimony in today's hearing. In an application for land development, the burden of proof belongs to the applicant. Burden of proof is a legal term that simply means it's the applicant's job to provide evidence that successfully demonstrates compliance with the criteria for permit approval and also the applicable development standards. However, in Thurston County, as in most jurisdictions, we hear from county representatives first. So in terms of order of testimony, I will hear from county staff. I have questions queued up for them. Then we'll hear from applicant representatives. And I do have a couple questions queued up for them. And after that, we'll go for public comments. And I will ask Ms. Cady to help me identify any members of the public in the meeting. Right now, I don't see any attendees in the audience, but we'll check in again at that point of the hearing. If there is public comment, I would ask staff and applicant representatives to join me in making note of questions or concerns that are raised. And after all members of the public who wish to testify have done so, we'll have responses, first from the staff of the county and then from applicant representatives. Then we will be done with testimony. I think everyone knows I'm not announcing a decision today. I'm required by county code to issue a written decision. That document will be comprised of findings of fact and conclusions of law. And per county code, I have 10 business days to issue that decision. Heads up to the applicant representatives, you are not obligated to agree, but at the end of the hearing, I will be asking you to kindly grant me a 5 business day extension. That would make the decision due 15 business days if you agree, 15 business days after the close of the record. So we'll discuss that at the end of the hearing. Also, please know, in virtual hearings, it is my practice to hold the record open briefly after the close of the hearing to allow people who had technology-related problems accessing and participating in this hearing to provide post-hearing written public comment. So that the record would be held open 2 days, and if we receive any, then I would be asking staff and applicant representatives to also respond in writing for the record. You would also have 2 business days. So there's going to be a post-hearing schedule, which I will explain at the end of the hearing, and then I will also email it in writing to Miss Katie, and she can forward it in writing to you from me, so we're all working from the same written information. With that, the last thing before we start, I will again formally deputize Miss Katie to jump in anytime it's necessary to bring my attention to procedural issues that need to be addressed. And I will also acknowledge the exhibits that were provided to me before today's hearing so I could conduct an efficient meeting. The first exhibit, as always, is the staff report from the Community Planning and Economic Development Department. It will be Exhibit 1. On the last page of the staff report, page 8, there is a list of attachments. They are identified as attachments A through N, as in Nemo. And I will let you know that I did review all the documents and they are admitted. If we have any additional documents, we will number them as they are admitted. That's it. We are ready to hear from county staff. If I could please have county staff unmute, state and spell your name, give us your correct job title, and allow me to swear you in.
Heather Tchaikovsky, HEATHERTSCHAEKOFSKE. I'm an associate planner and biologist with community planning.
Thank you very much. And if you would please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm your testimony today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
I thank you. Please go ahead.
All right. This is for Project 2023-105-222. Permit for reasonable use exception, or RUE. The applicant is Mountain Terrace Builders, Inc. The applicant seeks approval of RUE to construct a single-family residence and appurtenances within a wetland buffer. The proposed residence consists of a 1,700-square-foot single-family residence, 490-square-foot driveway and sidewalk, and 2,693-square-foot yard. Access to the property is to be provided from Vine Lane Southeast, a private roadway. The subject property has jurisdictional wetland and buffer that completely encumber the site. Thus, RUE is required in order to reduce buffers enough to allow for the residence and associated infrastructure. See attachments D, E, and F. The site is 0.28 acres or 12,197 square feet in size. The proposed development will require 5,625 square feet of unavoidable impact to the wetland buffer, which is 46% of the property, leaving the remainder of the site undeveloped per wetland protection standards. A mitigation plan for 5,625 square feet of buffer enhancement shall mitigate for the proposed residence and appurtenances, attachments E and F. Written notice of the public hearing was sent to all property owners within 500 feet of the site, and notice was published in the designated local paper on September 12, 2024, at least 10 days prior to the hearing. Attachment A. The project was determined by staff to be categorically exempt from CEPA review per WAC 197-11-800. The subject property is located within the rural portion of Thurston County within the Clearwood community. Comprehensive plan designation is residential, and the zoning district is the residential Lammerd RL 2-1, attachment B. The site has septic permit approval from 1976 for a prior trailer hookup. The subject property slopes to the east where it flattens into wetland. On-site vegetation consists of upland forest and hydrophytic wetland species. The property contains wetland, gopher soils, and critical aquifer recharge areas, which are critical areas subject to requirements of the Thurston County Critical Areas Ordinance, or CAO, Thurston County Code, or TCC 24. The property is also mapped within the rural shoreline jurisdiction for wetlands associated with Clear Lake, attachment N. The property contains a large wetland that extends mostly off-site. Chapter 24.30 of the CAO lists standards and limitations for development of property containing wetlands, including buffers. The wetland was delineated and categorized by a professional wetland consultant, Crater Land Use Consulting, report dated January 29, 2021, and addendum dated April 2024, see attachment F. Wetland A is a category 2 wetland with a habitat score of 8, which requires a 280-foot buffer per TCC 24.30.045. The new residence is proposed to be located approximately 38 feet from the closest wetland edge, and the septic drain field is already located within the wetland edge. The buffer reduction of wetland A would be 86%. The subject property is also mapped within prairie and Mazama pocket gopher soils. Sites within the Clearwood community are exempt from prairie survey due to heavy forest cover within densely populated small residential lots that are unlikely to support prairie habitat. The Thurston County HCP provides regulations for properties mapped within Mazama pocket gopher soils per TCC 17.40. An HCP application is required prior to building permit issuance, and the appropriate mitigation fees for impacts to listed species are calculated at the time of HCP application and approval. The property is mapped within a critical aquifer recharge area category 1, which is characterized by extreme aquifer sensitivity. The subject property is also located within the jurisdiction of the Shoreline Master Program for the Thurston Region, or SMPTR, within the rural shoreline environment. Single-family development is permitted subject to compliance with policies and regulations of the Residential Development Chapter of the SMPTR. The proposal meets SMPTR standards for a single-family residential lot on a non-conforming shoreline lot in a legal plat. The 50-foot rural shoreline setback is measured from the edge of ordinary high water and does not impact the subject lot. Staff finds the project to be consistent with RUE criteria. The property is zoned for residential use, and there appears to be insufficient area in the outer 50% of the standard wetland buffer for development of a residence and appurtenances consistent with the non-conforming use chapter TCC 24.50.060. Therefore, no other reasonable use of the property is permitted. Even though there are impacts to the wetland buffer proposed, the development represents the minimal alteration of the buffer. Proposed development of the home and appurtenances will not occur in the wetland, thus no direct impacts to the wetland will occur. The applicant subsequently redesigned the proposal to increase the buffer setback and reduce the proposed lawn area from the first submitted design and increase mitigation to meet no net loss at a 1-to-1 ratio. The applicant's biologist submitted a mitigation plan, attachment F. This plan involves a 1-to-1 ratio of impacts to buffer enhancement area as required in code. The mitigation plan will incorporate the applicable impact reduction measures found in TCC Table 24-30-2. These measures are considered the best available science for mitigation of buffer impacts. The mitigation will occur on site. An invasive removal and enhancement mitigation planting plan will result in no net loss of critical area functions and values of the wetland. The applicant will be providing a maintenance monitoring plan for woody and herbaceous vegetation that will assure success over a 10-year period as required. Hydrologic condition will be maintained by stormwater BMPs, which will not dewater the wetland. The grading requirements for the site are minimal, and the geologic condition should be maintained as well. As such, staff does not believe the activity will result in damage to other properties and should not threaten the health, safety, or welfare on or off the site, and the project should have little impact to critical areas, including impacts to vegetation and fish and wildlife resources. The project is designed such that there should be no substantive impacts to species of concern which require mitigation. The location and scale of existing development on surrounding properties is not listed by the applicant as a reason supporting their request. As proposed and conditioned, the application is consistent with Thurston County Comprehensive Plan. The Public Health and Social Services Department has no objection to RUE approval of the application, attachment H. Staff from Public Works Department closed their review with no comments. The Nisqually Indian Tribe submitted a comment letter stating they have no concerns with the proposal, attachment I. One public comment was submitted in favor of the application, Attachment M. Based on this analysis, the Community Planning and Economic Development Department concludes that the proposal, when appropriately conditioned, meets Thurston County requirements for RUE permit upon hearing examiner approval.
Thank you. Just a few questions. Any testimony about the relatively lengthy period of time between notice of application and notice of hearing?
I don't believe there were any delays other than when matrix items were sent out, just waiting for the response from the applicant.
Great. Just to confirm, because the site is in the Clearwood community, they're exempt from the requirement to perform a gopher survey, but must still apply for an HCP application and make mitigation payments?
They're actually exempt from the prairie vegetation survey, but the gopher survey is still, there is no gopher survey anymore. It's the okay. HCP application process.
Great. Thank you for that clarification.
Yep.
Thank you. One thing I didn't find, and it may be here and I just missed it. I was looking for the distance between the ordinary high water mark of Clear Lake and the subject property. Do you have that?
Not on hand. I'd have to take that measurement, but it's pretty far.
And so we're in shoreline jurisdiction, but we're yes. well outside 50 feet.
Yes.
So we're within 200 feet, but we're well outside 50 feet.
Well, the shoreline jurisdiction is just as mapped for geodata. So what that means is the portion of the property that is within that mapped shoreline jurisdiction is still subject to, say, the 30% impervious surface standards for residential development, but structural setback standards are only applicable to the setback from ordinary high water.
Got it. Got it. So 30% impervious surface, and this project satisfies that 30% impervious surface maximum?
It appears to. We would look at that fully at the time of building permit.
Thank you. Thanks for that. So the site plan at attachment E is based on the previous proposal, the prior not yet one-to-one mitigation. So I noticed in attachment F, the updated information, the addendum starts at PDF page 89, and it appears that there is a revised site plan at PDF 98. Should that be the site plan referred to in my findings?
Yes, that is the, at this point, final site plan with the revisions to the buffer setback and mitigation.
Great. In many reasonable use permit staff reports, I find a condition of approval that recommends that, a recommended condition that recommends the applicant be required to develop consistent with the approved site plan. I didn't see that in these conditions. Does it need to be added or is it not necessary?
It's possible I may have missed that. It could be added.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. Also, the drainage plan in the drainage report is also based on the former proposal, the pre one-to-one mitigation. So do we need an updated drainage plan? And if yes, when is that required?
I would have to defer to DevRev on that, I believe, at the time of building permit.
We can have other county staff speak to that in we can have other county staff speak to that right now, because I think my next questions are for environmental health. That one question regarding the drainage plan, is that for Mr. Saint?
Yes.
Could we have you introduce yourself, please, sir?
Yes, I'm Arthur Saint, that's ArthurSaint, with the Thurston County Public Works Department.
And do you swear your testimony today will be true?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Saint, when would an updated drainage plan be required?
With the building permit up. Okay.
And in your opinion, do we need to add a condition addressing that, or is that just going to happen in the normal course?
That's just always required.
Thank you, Mr. Saint. Anything else you'd like to bring to my attention about this proposal?
Not at this time.
Thanks for being here. I do have a couple of questions for environmental health. The first one is just to note that the EHD condition recommended at attachment H didn't make it into the staff report conditions. And so I was going to ask Ms. Peebles if that needs to be added. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Good morning, Dawn Peebles. That's DawnPeebles, Environmental Health Program Manager with Thurston County Public Health and Social Services.
Thank you. Do you swear or affirm your testimony will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Peebles?
And yes, to answer your question, that condition can be included in the staff report. Our department did review the project, and as mentioned by Ms. Tchaikovsky, a septic system was permitted and approved in 1976 to serve the property. It's also currently served by a Clearwood Group A community water system. And so this proposed residence would connect to both of those utilities. And I'm happy to answer any additional questions you may have.
Great. The only question I had, Ms. Peebles, is whether you can speak to, and actually it might be for Ms. Tchaikovsky, are there any specific requirements related to the fact that the property is underlain by a critical aquifer recharge area?
Not based on the existing development, no. Again, that septic system was permitted in 1976 and is deemed conforming per Article 4 based on the fact that it was in existence prior to 79, is not in failure, and its use is consistent with its size and design. And so that's where our condition comes into play, is prior to release of the building permit, the system will need to be pumped and inspected to show it's in sound condition.
And if it isn't, then it would simply be repaired or replaced, correct?
Correct.
Great. And so the underlying critical aquifer recharge area doesn't trigger any specific environmental health requirements?
No.
Thank you, Ms. Peebles. Anything else you want to bring to my attention?
Not at this time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tchaikovsky, is there anything specific related to the critical aquifer recharge area that needs to be addressed?
Nothing more than what would come through the environmental health review for a single family residence.
Great. Thank you very much. I don't have other questions for the county. We are ready to hear applicant's testimony. Could I have you please unmute? And then if you'd like to both swear in, we can swear you both in, and we'll handle that however you like. I need to have you state and spell your names, give me your correct titles, and I will administer the oath.
Jody Clifford, JodyClifford, and project manager for Mountain Terrace Builders.
Mike Kempinski, MikeKempinski, and property owner.
Great. Thank you very much. Swear you in. Do you swear or affirm your testimony today will be true? If so, please say I do.
I do.
Great. Any testimony you'd like to offer?
Yeah, so Jody's more familiar with it, but you, Arthur, and you had spoke about the drainage plan.
Yes.
We submitted, I believe to Heather, right?
Yeah.
A site plan through our civil, Chris Merritt, a site plan for our drainage. And I'm not sure if that's part of, it's going to get into the packet now, or is that, Arthur had mentioned that that goes in at time of permit, but you guys had asked for it previous to time of permit, obviously, for this situation. And so I'm curious, does that go into it now, or does that go in later on?
Well, and let me just confirm. So I do have obviously the drainage plan with the site plan, but the site plan in the engineered abbreviated drainage plan at attachment J is based on the previous configuration with the less than 1-to-1 mitigation ratio. And so was there a revised one based on the 1-to-1 mitigation ratio for drainage specifically?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So I do have the drainage plan. Prepare, oops, it's upside down.
What is the difference between?
And it's prepared by Olympic Engineering, and that's in the
Yes.
record at attachment J. I do have that, but the
Okay.
site plan and the text of this plan relates to the former site design before it was revised to reflect one-to-one mitigation. So that's all I was asking, is if a revised plan for this is required based on the revised site plan. And Mr. Saint confirmed that that would happen at the time of building permit. Did that address your question, Mr. Kempinski?
Not no, maybe not.
Okay.
I'm not sure if this, because this was just done what, 2 weeks ago. So I'm not sure if this one, what makes it different than the, because it sounds like to me there's two site plans. One was an older one, one's a newer one that reflects the one-to-one situation. I'm not sure, and maybe Heather knows. Is this one different than the one that's approved as the one-to-one? The site plan that we're going with, I'm not sure if it's if, what makes it different, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out.
So I'm looking at page, this is page 2 of 4 in the text document, and it's talking about clearing a total area of 6,800 square feet. And I think that's the previous proposal. I think at this point, the maximum area to be impacted is 5,625. And that's what made me believe this is based on the prior layout and not the currently proposed site design.
Okay.
So it would need revised from Olympic Engineering.
Is that true, Mr. Saint?
And
Yes,
resubmitted at
he
time
says
of building
yes. Yeah.
application.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and
Okay.
again, that's not needed until time of building permit application.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nope, so that
And
answers.
just, sorry, Heather here, just to interject, it looks like it's the same footprint for the home and driveway. I think the primary difference was where they were showing the yard area, possibly.
Okay. Okay.
Thank
Okay.
you.
That answers that.
Okay, great. Any other testimony you want to make or anything else you want to bring to my attention?
No, I don't think
I don't think
so.
so.
No.
I just want to confirm, I'm looking at the site plan. That is again PDF page 98. So it's the revised site plan in the update of the critical areas wetland delineation memo. And it looks to me like the structure itself is proposed to be set back 38 feet from the edge of wetland. And because that's a 15-foot building setback from the proposed reduced buffer, doing the math, it looks like it's a 23-foot proposed setback from the development envelope to the edge of the wetland. I just want to confirm that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So that 5 feet, that 5 foot area is probably just going to be landscaping. In fact, I think you're proposing to put more mitigation plantings in that 5 foot setback area.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Just confirming the numbers. And then just for the findings, do you know when the former residence on site was removed?
When we bought it, there wasn't a residence, and I was informed it was an RV or something. There is power service there, so I'm not sure. And the person we bought it from, I know them pretty well. They owned it for a long time, and there was never an RV there. So I think the RV's been gone a little while.
Okay. And then when did you purchase the property?
Yeah,
2016.
2016.
Okay, great. Thank you. I don't have other questions. Anything else at all you want to bring to my attention?
No, I don't think so.
Great.
No,
Thanks for
thank
being
you.
here.
Yeah.
Miss Katie, there's one attendee.
Yeah, we have one attendee, Kim Delaney. If you'd like to go ahead and testify, you can hit the button that says raise your hand, and it's usually on the bottom of your screen. And if you're able to
So
find that button, usually if you wave your mouse, you'll see it. There we go.
there you go. Great. Okay, Miss Katie will promote you.
If you'll be getting a prompt on your screen asking you to rejoin as a panelist.
Please just unmute, and you can share your video if you are able and you'd like to. Are you there? We are not able to hear you. Do you have a... Are you there?
It appears you're unmuted. Sorry.
Try one more time. There you go. Can we hear you now? We're not hearing you. I don't know if you have audio controls that you can select a different audio source.
Yep, it should be next to where it says audio. There's the caret pointing up, and there'll be the audio settings where you could select what microphone or speaker you're using.
Well, unfortunately, Kim Delaney, we are not able to hear you. If you would like to provide testimony, Ms. Katie, can we provide Kim Delaney the call in phone number and then we can pause for a moment and see if they call in?
Yeah, 1 second.
Just so that we can close the record today.
Okay, and Ms. Delaney, if you have a pen handy, the phone number that you would call in is 253-205-0468, and then you'll be prompted to put in the webinar ID, and it's kind of a long number. That's going to be 869-0432-9808, and lastly, it will ask you for the passcode, which is 968-094.
So we'll pause just for a moment and see if we get a phone call. If this doesn't work, then obviously this person is trying to provide comment and they're having technology related problems, and they would be allowed to submit post-hearing written comment because they were unable to testify. So we'll just pause for a moment and see if we get a phone call. Well, I'm sure it's very frustrating trying to participate and not being able to. Do you have a call? Oh, great. There we go.
We do have a phone call, yeah.
Excellent.
And I believe it's *6 to unmute yourself from the phone. And if it's not *6, it's *9. I can Google it really quick.
Hello.
I'm muted.
Yay.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear
I have zero comment. I just was watching because I have an RUE coming up, and I just wanted to see the process.
Great. Thanks for letting us know.
You bet. Bye.
Take care. Thanks for letting us know. All right. No public comment, but at this point, I'm going to throw it out to the county. Ms. Tchaikovsky, anybody else on county staff, any last comments for the record today?
No comment.
Great. Thanks very much. And then Mr. Kempinski, Ms. Clifford, any final comments for the record today? Nope. All right. Thanks very much, everybody. Oh, I do need you to unmute because now is the time when I have to plead for my 5 extra business days. I don't know if you're on a tight schedule. You're not obligated to say yes. And if you say no, I will do everything I can to get it out on time, but it looks hairy. So if you are willing to grant me 5 extra business days, it means the difference between receiving the decision on October 10th or October 15th.
October 15th sounds fine.
Okay. So if we did receive post-hearing comment, it would actually be extended for 2 more business days. But I don't know that we will. So let's go over the post hearing schedule now. I did request these days and the applicant very kindly granted them. So I'm going to hold the record open for post hearing comment through September 26th. If we get none, the 15 business day decision deadline is October the 15th. If we do receive post hearing public comment, I would ask staff to please forward it to the applicants as soon as possible so that they and staff can respond in writing for the record. Your responses are due on September 30th because you also get two business days. And the record would close on September 30th, generating a decision, a 15 day decision issuance deadline of October 21. I have a feeling that's supposed to be October 14th. I will do the calendar math one more time and make sure that I give you correct dates in writing, and then we won't be confused. But I appreciate your granting me the additional time. It will help me keep my on-time delivery average high. I appreciate that. Thanks everybody for your work on the matter and your testimony and being here today. And we are concluded. Have a good day.